Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Chris, we had, I think, a good episode of Collision tonight, anchored by three Continental Classic matches that I think was a collection of diverse ring styles and backstories with the wrestlers, where not only were the matches compelling on paper, but I think they lived up to higher-end expectations, all things considered, and I thought the announcers did a good job talking about the stakes. I thought it was the best set of sound bites at the top of a show that Collision has had. Not that it's, you know, there's only so much you can do with those, but this I thought was a step up in terms of being kind of light on cliches and platitudes, and was tied to the point totals and the positions of each of the wrestlers in the tournament. We even got what I called for recently, which was the locker room shot of a wrestler before a big match in their locker room with Eddie Kingston. I think AEW is doing a good job with this tournament. It's not the tournament I wanted in terms of all the big names being in there, but there's enough big names and enough talent and enough stories that AEW is telling where it's been really good. So there's my assessment. What do you think of tonight's episode in particular, and then broadening it out to the tournament so far, Chris?
Yeah, I thought it was a good show. I think that the promos at the beginning are really strengthened because they are fighting for something. Even if we can argue or discuss kind of Continental Classic, how it got together, and I'm sure we'll get into that with some callers or emailers down the line. You know, all six wrestlers are fighting for something, and there's a reason for them to be in the ring. There's a reason for the matches. So it made those matches stand out. I think they were definitely the highlight of the show. There were probably some other areas I'd probably be a little bit more critical of. I think the Continental Classic has been good because AEW's problem has been we just have great matches, just come watch the matches, but there's no reason for it. And the Continental Classic has given them a reason. I think that's really important. Hopefully something they can put forward more than just this tournament.
I was a little worried that the tournament was going to be sort of like Tony giving himself filling a bunch of TV time without having to book, if that makes sense. Like, just it would be leaning on what you just said, a crutch, which is, well, we have good wrestlers and we're just going to give them freedom to tell their story in the ring, and then the booking can be kind of sloppy or you know, just not as layered and nuanced as ideal. But the other option going into this was, and then I wrote about it when the tournament was announced and the wrestlers were announced, is there is a way you can tell a lot of stories. With the points, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat, wrestlers reacting to it. I think they've done a really good job with the scoreboard, showing the chart that shows, you know, who they've wrestled so far and who has points and what the rankings are. And the announcers are treating it seriously and have a grasp of what's at stake and giving them something concrete to talk about in that sports-like way, which is, hey, he lost. If he loses again, he's, as Kevin Kelly said a few times, he's going to be on the bubble or you know, near being statistically eliminated from being able to win the tournament. So between the wrestlers stepping up with their promos and treating this like a real sports tournament, and then the announcers and the graphics and the importance placed on it, I think it's good. I don't know that it's going to be a draw for everybody, you know, for a real wide audience, because it, you know, you have these face-to-face matchups, heel-heel matchups, lopsided matchups in terms of who's expected to win, because they did throw, not scrubs, but, you know, a few people in the tournament who I don't think most fans think are really competitive to win most of the matches that they're having. But for people who like this or were open to liking it, I think AEW is delivering. And it was always going to come down mostly to the wrestlers putting on good matches, but that alone wasn't going to be enough for, I think, this tournament concept to seem like a winner. It would take the graphics, the promos, and the stories. And so far, so good. We're still, I consider this quite early, Chris, in terms of what the real story of the tournament's going to be, in terms of the drama of who makes a comeback after some early losses, or who's dominating and then slips up, that kind of thing. So there's still more to go, but I come out of tonight optimistic and find myself enjoying it and giving a thumbs up to the overall presentation.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of issues in the tournament when they start comparing it to the Japanese ones and saying it's exactly the same. It's not, but it's given AEW kind of a template of kind of how to focus wrestlers. I mean, you know, to be honest, there were some other matches on the show that just seemed to be thrown together, which I'm sure we'll talk to you about later. But the best part about the Continental Classic is there's something that everyone is, or these 12 wrestlers are fighting for. And it's very clear of what their objective is. I think it would have been beneficial for AEW if they would have listed out the schedule more in advance. It was funny on the show, they were talking about all the matches for Dynamite that are taking place in the Continental Classic and mentioned in the last maybe minute and a half, oh, by the way, here are the matches on next week's Collision.
Yeah.
I was like, well, if you're going to present this tournament, then you should know in advance who's going to be wrestling in a week, and you can set that up throughout the show. You know, you could have, for example, you could have Brody King, after he beat Claudio, talk about, well, next I'm wrestling, I don't know who, I don't think he has a match, I don't know who he's wrestling next, but you could have built anticipation for that match on this show instead of just it being kind of random who he wrestles in a week or so.
Yeah, and it would give fans more to talk about. People could map out, you know, pivotal matches, who they think, where they think a turning point is in the tournament, and just look forward to it more. I think the more that you give fans to talk about online and with friends, the more they can kind of sink their teeth into the whole concept. But you know, there's a little bit of a little bit of suspense and mystery that is a little bit off, of an offsetting positive, which is you don't really know by not knowing what's coming up next. It creates a little bit more doubt about who's going to be matched up in that final match, that fifth and final match for some of the key names, because that might actually give a little away in terms of where they're heading, although it would take some dot connecting to really come up with anything too solid.
Yeah, that's been the issue with, for me, the last few years in the G1. Last couple of years, they've changed the groups, so it's been a bit different. But before, if you looked at the cards of the last two shows, you could tell who was going to be in contention and who wasn't going to be, based on who was going to be in the main event.
Yeah.
So there is an element of that of you don't want people to know too much in advance, because it takes away from the tournament going ahead if you already know what's really going to happen in 3 weeks. But because the tournament is also going to be done, I think, the winners of each block, our league, are going to wrestle each other at the World's End pay-per-view at the lovely Nassau Coliseum nearby where I grew up. So there isn't much time to lead into them having that match. I think for AEW standpoint, they would love to have a week where the two wrestlers maybe cut a promo or maybe have some kind of interaction that sets up their final match, as opposed to you just won this league on you won the league on Rampage and I won the league on Dynamite, and we're just going to wrestle on the pay-per-view in a day or 2 days.
So right now with the chart, and we'll, for people who didn't see the show and are just tuning in to the post show, we had Andrade beating Danny Garcia in 11 minutes to gain 3 points. We had Brody King getting a win over Claudio in 13 minutes. I wasn't thrilled that immediately they brought up, well, he might have knocked him out with his cast. I just would have rather had Brody King get a win and not immediately give an excuse for Claudio losing. Small point, but worth noting, I think. And then Bryan Danielson beat Eddie Kingston in the main event in 16 minutes. So what that does is it puts in the tournament brackets, it gives Danielson a big win and another setback for Eddie Kingston. Chris, what do you think the results tonight tell you about where they're heading in the tournament? Can you make any kind of forecast?
Well, I think, I mean, we all assumed Danielson was going to be one of the favorites, so I can see them setting up maybe him wrestling a Brody King at the end where the winner goes through. I think, in all honesty, Eddie Kingston looks bad losing to a man with one eye, even though man is considered to be one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. And there's a storyline with Daniel Garcia in his last two matches, or first two matches, and I hope that you know, obviously he's not going to win too many matches in this tournament, but that at the end of it, there is some sort of culmination of what's happening with him for some character development, as opposed to just an excuse during this tournament, and it never gets brought up again.
The point total, too, just to catch people up here, Brody King's got 6 points. He's the only one in the blue league or the blue block with 6 points. Danielson only has one match so far. I think they were just kind of delaying, giving him extra time to heal. But his win tonight gives him 3. Andrade's also got 3 points. Claudio has 3 points, but 2 matches. Andrade's got 3 points with only 1 match. And then Danny Garcia's at 0 points, and Eddie Kingston at 0 points. Are they setting up, because nobody's got 9 points yet. It's possible Brody King will be the person who is the early unexpected favorite who drops 3 in a row. And then Eddie Kingston is the underdog who comes back from the brink and wins 3 in a row. And if they do that, as long as Danielson doesn't score 9, he only gets 1 more win. I don't know, you know, how they'd go about that, because he still has to face Brody, Andrade, Claudio, and Garcia. I could see him losing to Claudio, Brody, but they'd have to – no, I could see him beating Brody King, because Brody it can't win another match unless he's going to end up with 9 points. So, yeah, we're deep enough into it where storyline-wise, it is set up for Eddie to be the comeback, the comeback kid, Brody to come on strong at the beginning but fall short, and then Danielson to be the one who the drama is around whether he can tie or surpass Eddie, because he will be, unless they catch him up in terms of the matches he's had, he'll have 1 less match than others going through this tournament.
And they did mention one of the matches for next week is Bryan Danielson against Andrade El Idolo, and they both have 1 match.
Yep.
So one of them presumably will have 2 wins, and they'll be vaunted ahead. And obviously Claudio's wrestling Eddie Kingston, where Eddie Kingston has 2 losses. So if he loses to Claudio, he'll be eliminated officially, but he'd virtually be eliminated.
Yeah, there's going to be – well, we haven't had the draws yet. So there are circumstances – actually, I wasn't even thinking about that when I first did the run-through here of points. If you get 6 points and you never get to 9, then – well, Brody King's already got 6 – if you get 6 points but then get a draw, you can end up at 7 points, and that could be enough if suddenly there's a bunch of draws. That's a part where I wasn't quite sure. Kevin Kelly's getting a little ahead of himself talking about being eliminated from a tournament when they've worked so hard to tell fans it's not elimination style, it's just point-wise. I think he should finish the sentence and say eliminated from a realistic chance to score enough points. And on the bubble felt a little weird, too, his phrasing. I wasn't quite sure. I mean, I know what he meant, but I wasn't quite sure it was the best phrasing given the format of the tournament and the fact that if everybody starts going to draws, somebody who gets 2 wins can suddenly tie or go ahead of others who seem like they're in the command position right now.
Well, have they explained how ties work? Because I'm taking this from Tony Khan's words, since he said this is based off of soccer, which I love as a soccer fan. 3 points for victory is one of the issues I have with the NHL. Not issues, but 3 points for a victory makes a victory more valuable than a tie, because you need 3 ties to be 1 win, as opposed to NHL 2 ties to be 1 win, separate non sequitur. But if Brody King has already beaten Eddie Kingston, so does that mean that if they're tied, Brody King is ahead of him because the tiebreaker is he beat him?
Yeah, the head-to-head. I don't recall if that has been explained. But I also – maybe it did, and I'm just conflating it with the NBA midseason tournament, because that is a tiebreaker in that. If 2 teams end up with the same record, then the head-to-head determines it, which is what knocked my Timberwolves out of the play-in tournament. I don't think they have, but it makes sense with 5 matches only in this that there's a likelihood of ties. And, of course, you will have a head-to-head battle with anyone else you've tied with, because you'll wrestle everybody else in your bracket, in your league, in your block. So I would assume that would be the deciding factor. But I don't know that that's – in all the explaining of the rules, I don't have a concrete memory of them saying that.
Yeah, and that's sort of part of the issues with the permutations, which you're going to get a little bit deeper in when you have, you know, 1 or 2 matches left, is what are the tiebreakers? You know, what are – you know, we want – someone to, you know, for example, exactly, you know, Eddie Kingston, you know, if he can't catch Brody King, then he's in trouble because he, or Danielson. So if one of them gets to, or so if both Danielson and him get to 9 points, I think he would be eliminated if that's the case. But I think that's part of it, that this has to be very clearly explained. And obviously, if we've spent 10 minutes or so, longer than that maybe, trying to figure it out, then obviously it's not as clear as perhaps it should be.
Yes. As we get closer, I assume they will really draw attention to that. Let's pause. Let's formally introduce the show and then get on to other aspects of the show and dive a little more into the broader Continental Classic Tournament brackets, look at the Gold League, the Gold Block 2, and kind of see where things are headed. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Saturday, December 2nd, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. You can become a VIP member and have tons of benefits, including access to 35 years of archives of hundreds of retro radio shows from the 90s and thousands of podcasts dating back 20-plus years and over 1,800 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, and access to our ad-free website, and also access to ad-free versions of these free shows, along with a whole lineup of VIP exclusive shows. Go to pwtorch.com/govip for different ways to sign up, including Patreon, directly using your iPhone, using your Apple account within the Apple Podcast app, or through our VIP website with credit card, debit card, or PayPal. Lots of ways to sign up, different benefits with different packages. Check it out, pwtorch.com/govip. We are here every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and most Saturday nights, unless we're going collisions going head-to-head with a premium live event. And this is the post-show format where we take live calls and read emails on the air with a live stream after the shows go off the air, roughly about 5 minutes after they end. And then you can also download the show, which is what most of you do, afterwards on our podcast feed. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app and subscribe to this, the Red Logo Show, and then also our Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, which includes our weekly flagship, some classic interviews, and other flashback features, and other formats. They're free. Search Wade Keller and subscribe. While you're at it, search PW Torch on your podcast app and subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast and also our PW Torch VIP free sample feed. And it's within that podcast feed, by the way, that you can upgrade to a VIP membership with all our VIP shows within your Apple account, within your Apple podcast app with your Apple account. But on the PW Torch Daily Cast, it's a different show every day of the week with a different format. And the other voice you hear on the show is the host of one of those, Chris Maitland, who is paired with Justin McClelland, and they do the Wrestling Coast to Coast show every week. Chris, welcome back to the Coast Chair.
Thank you for having me. And yes, we do Wrestling Coast to Coast every week. Me with my best friends on this earth, Justin McClelland. We talk about an independent wrestling show every week. Last week we did the WrestleCade Super Show. It actually featured some wrestlers who appeared on this episode of Collision, Andrade El Idolo, with CJ Perry, who managed him there, as well as El Hijo del Vikingo were on that show. Next week, I think we're going to do some MLW in preparation for the MLW one-shot. So, yeah, we go around the wrestling world, do a different show each week, and just go over what we think. It's been a very good experience for us. We were formerly the Ring of Honor show, Honor Speak, before Ring of Honor, the Sinclair era of Ring of Honor. And I'm sure I'll have some thoughts on the Ring of Honor references that took place on today's Collision.
Very good. All right. If you want to give us a call, I know we've been gone for a couple weeks because we've been covering Survivor Series in full gear, and Collision either went head-to-head with SmackDown or head-to-head with Survivor Series. And so we are glad to be back covering Collision live. My written report on Collision is available at pwtorch.com, and I encourage you to check that out every week. But right now, we're here to talk with you if you are listening live and want to join us. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. 8558. We're very light on even people who've called in to listen. I was fearful we'd lose some momentum by not being on these last two Saturdays. But if you are listening live and want to give us a call, it will be a short wait, and we'd love to hear from you. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, Chris, I want to move just to an email to kick off this segment from Azan from St. Louis. And he said, hello, Wade and Chris. Vikingo is an incredible talent and is very young. Where would you like to see him book-wise if AW signed a long-term deal with him? Chris, what do you think of Vikingo? What do you think of his background? What do you think of his future?
Vikingo is one of the most impressive wrestlers that we have seen. Justin and I have covered on Wrestling Coast to Coast. His matches are always incredible. I think he is an example of AEW's poor booking, and I'll explain why. His very first appearance on AEW was against Kenny Omega a few months ago in what was called a dream match, in which it's only a dream match if you are familiar with him from AAA or the independents. If you are not, it wasn't a dream match. You didn't know who he was. The match was very, very good. And at the time, there was the argument of, well, he was only available at this time. They had to do this match. Subsequently, he's appeared on Rampage. He's appeared on Ring of Honor pay-per-views. He appeared today on Collision. And just kind of randomly, like, he wrestled Kip Sabian in a match where I felt like something else was supposed to happen. And these two guys were there, and they're like, hey, something else. Somebody got hurt or they can't make it. Can you guys go out there and fill some time? Because that's really what it was on the show. He's a very special talent, but he needs to be showcased as one. He needs to be put over in matches for a time and then move up the card, wrestling higher people up the card. You're just throwing him out there every 4 weeks or so, putting him out there in a match. You know, that will be a very exciting match, very entertaining, and then you don't see him or hear from or have him mentioned at all for another 3 weeks. You do it again, is not really helpful. He's a special talent, and maybe they don't have a contractual obligation to use him as often as they'd like. But for me, he's someone, if that they do have the ability to use him, they need to treat him as special because he's a special talent.
What could AEW do better in terms of the wrestlers who don't speak English as their first language, where they can cut confident promos? And how do you differentiate when there's been a tendency in U.S. companies, with some exceptions, Rey Mysterio, a good example, but to treat luchadors as sort of interchangeable high spot artists with masks or no masks, and Japanese wrestlers in sort of interchangeable ways sometimes as novelties, and the wrestlers who aren't cutting those promos and fitting sort of the traditional mold of who they push are not – promoters sometimes just fall back on – I don't know, bad habits. And again, not really differentiating their personalities. And do you think AEW is guilty of that? Do you think they're better than average in that regard or really good? And, you know, Vikingo is in that mix, but so are plenty of others who they're featuring. I know there's people frustrated with the Lucha Brothers and the fact that, you know, they are put out there to have good matches, but they haven't really gotten behind them in a consistent way where you look at them as either a primary tag team or primary singles wrestlers where you'd be like, that's one of the reasons I'm an AEW fan and tuning in each week.
Yeah. What's been frustrating for me about the Lucha Brothers, I've actually seen them both cut promos on the independents, and you know, English is their second language, but I did understand what they were saying. It wasn't that hard for me to keep up with what they were saying. And the AEW hasn't given them that opportunity. They have too many wrestlers who are just standing with random manager. I think the best example of this that I saw was actually in the COVID era Ring of Honor, where they were giving Bandido a push as the setting up to be the world champion and then the world champion. He was actually given subtitles. And I think that, you know, WWE has done that with Shinsuke Nakamura very recently. And I think that's really important. I think in a promotion, now AEW has more managers than WWE does, but in a promotion where someone has a manager, the thought process is, well, that person needs someone to talk for them. and they kind of get looked at a different way. I feel that it's okay to have some people have managers, but to me, when I saw nothing against Alex Abrahantes, but Penta and Phoenix can cut their own promos. I've seen them do it, but they're not really given that opportunity. I think part of it with AEW is that they just book these they book a lot of luchadors just randomly. Even a few weeks ago, it was I can't remember if it was Penta or Phoenix. One of them was injured. It's like, oh, you'll just team with Commander. I was like, well, why? I mean, these guys are brothers. Why are they teaming with someone else? I think they need to just show them individually as a bit more respect and accentuate their positives. You know, English is not their first language. You know, use subtitles, have them differentiate more than they do now, and you know, push them as individually, not just throw them together randomly just because, you know, they're all Mexican.
Yeah. All right, Athan also says, the whole Continental Classic is making me feel like Bryan Danielson's authority in the company is increasing every day. Does Bryan being in Tony's ear have a positive impact on the company's future? You know, and I have mixed feelings about that because I think there's, you know, Danielson has a passion about certain aspects of wrestling, but I don't know that where his passion lies is the key is going to unlock the key or is the key to unlock what AEW needs to do to grow. I don't know that he doesn't have some of it, but to me, it's not good wrestling or, talking about ring styles. It has to do with framing the good matches in a way, especially once we get past this tournament where they sort of have these stakes and talking points built in a way where you also are making the wrestlers involved in the match bigger stars than they were last month and the month before and the month before that. Once you pick who you want to be your stars, is building them in the stars and putting them in an atmosphere and a framework where they can shine and grow and where viewers have a clear, passionate opinion on whether they want them to succeed or fail instead of an opinion on how many stars their matches are going to get. And I just don't know that that's where Danielson's strength is. So in a way, I would want Danielson to be a voice, but not the voice, perhaps, because I just don't know if Danielson's thinking about the production of the show and the cadence of the booking and an issue with AEW, which is just deciding who your stars are going to be and making sure when they appear, you turn them into bigger stars. And yes, that's something WWE really focuses on. If AEW did that, it doesn't mean they become like WWE. What it means is the things that are their strengths become – they maximize what their strengths are by doing something that WWE is doing to maximize their strengths. But those strengths can be different. But you need stars and you need clear-cut characters that fans are emotionally invested in either seeing succeed or fail. Obviously, fans are invested in seeing Christian Cage fail. You know, that is for sure. But they've got a lot of wrestlers cast in a way where they're getting the opposite reaction of the story that's being told in the ring or in their promos or in their actions. Jon Moxley, Claudio, I mean, they're getting cheered, but they're sort of tweeners, but they're a little bit more heelish in some of the things that they do. Even more so, they've been fighting this battle with House of Black, going back to it being kind of a turning point for poor Cody Rhodes back in the day when the fans are cheering Malakai Black over him, and they're still chanting for the House of Black at the expense of FTR tonight. And it's not just that. It's like, well, who cares if fans cheer a heel? Well, and maybe it's not a big deal until it undercuts the baby faces and embarrasses them. And I think FTR standing in the ring as the crowd is chanting House of Black and FTR are opposite of them, the babyface opponents when there's heels who are being cheered. So I say all that not to run down, you know, bullet points of here's areas where AEW can improve, but I just don't know that that's where Danielson's strengths and passions lie. So I want him as a voice, but I don't think he's the solution. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I think the two big issues that AEW has is in their kind of future. One is WWE grievance is not enough to run a wrestling promotion, and good matches are not good enough to run a wrestling promotion. Justin and I watch wrestling, you know, we do wrestling coast to coast every week, and we see good matches every week, independent wrestlers all around the country. And, you know, good matches are subjective. What could be good to you may not be good to me, for me, and vice versa. The key thing in that I think people lose sight of because they're so WWE focused, but to take it back to more than WWE is that wrestling has always gravitated towards stars. There are always people that are wrestlers that people wanted to see wrestle and see them win. I think a lot of it I take in context of sports. You know, you mentioned before that you're a Minnesota Timberwolves fan. I don't actually know who the biggest Minnesota Timberwolves rival is, but I know the Vikings is Green Bay.
Yes.
And Green Bay is a heel for Vikings fans. You don't when the Packers played the Steelers in the Super Bowl, I don't think, you know, people who are Minnesota Viking fans are rooting for a good game. They're rooting for certain results.
Yeah.
I think that's a problem that AEW has. It's too much of, oh, it'll be a good match, you'll enjoy it. But a lot of people need a rooting interest into rooting for one side or against the other side. And I think the problem is they don't focus on people enough to kind of build them up the right way. I think the key person who is not on Collision that we were going to really see how good they are in building them up is Swerve Strickland, because he's been doing heelish things, but he's getting over with the crowd. He's someone who I think should win this tournament, but if he's getting over the crowd, I think you need to make him be more of a babyface. He doesn't have to be the family man babyface, Ricky Steamboat, 89 WCW theme song. But if the crowd is cheering him, they need to make it that way. I think there's too much of an emphasis on, oh, it doesn't matter who the crowd cheers or who they boo. I think it takes away from people who don't watch every week to find people to gravitate to be in favor of or against. I think that the Danielson style is not really focused on gravitating towards someone or against someone. It's more like, we'll just put together great matches, and the more great matches we put together, the more people will come. But you need to have both great matches as well as character development.
Yes. Yep. And I just, Danielson's track record is mixed when it even comes to how he presents himself in that regard. So, like I said, not that you don't want his voice there. And there's a maturity and a level-headedness to a lot of what he is helping Tony with, and also just sort of the authority of being Bryan Danielson. When it comes to kind of not policing the locker room, but, you know, overseeing it and being a positive influence. But booking-wise, I would want other voices there. Azan also says, what made Sky Blue's career take a turn for the better lately? What do you think of Sky Blue overall, Chris? And what do you think of her promo tonight in response to Toni Storm? And feel free to comment on Toni Storm, too, while we're at it, because that's always fun.
I think Sky Blue has been a great story for AEW, and the fact that she sort of came out of nowhere and earned her contract and has become a wrestler who's improved. And I think, you know, her promo was good today. For me, what's just weird is, well, two things. One, it was not that long ago she was feuding with Julia Hart over The Mist, which, you know, I guess we've moved on from that. But also, she hasn't win enough to be getting a title match. In the show, we had a wrestler, and I guess in a way, Julia Hart and Abaddon, you had champions challenging other people, which to me is just sort of against the whole tenor of wrestling. Like, I'm the champion. Why should I be challenging you? I mean, I guess you could argue Toni Storm's character, she's a bit, you know, in her own world, does her own thing. But I think with Sky Blue, I think it would have been better off for her if she'd won a few matches in a row, not just the, you know, last match or whatever match you have to win to get into a number one contendership. And so she's seen as a credible challenger because she just wrestled for the TNT title. TBS title?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. TNT is the last title. Yeah.
Yeah. And lost. And now she's getting a shot at the world title. It just doesn't make sense.
When we talk about wrestlers who are miscast, is Toni Storm going to is it sustainable to be presenting her as a heel? And Sky Blue saying that Storm is going through a pathetic midlife crisis and saying, I'm going to shove her shoe up her ass. I think there's a certain context where that would get cheered, but I don't know that Toni Storm in her current character, the way to play off of that is to call her pathetic and say it's a midlife crisis. Like I wasn't crazy about the tone of Sky Blue unless the goal is for Sky Blue to get booed and Tony Storm to be cheered. It felt a little nastier than the current circumstances call for.
Yeah, and that's kind of the issue with Sky Blue was, again, a few weeks ago, had to be pulled back from the dark side by Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale. If she was still the plucky baby face, you could maybe see, all right, she's getting fired up. There's kind of a purpose to what she's saying. As you said, it just seems that she's being mean-spirited toward Toni Storm. But, yeah, I mean, the problem with heels, it's always happened in wrestling, that, you know, heels that make you laugh get cheered because they say things that are funny.
Mm-hmm.
And the character she has where she's, you know, making fun of Renee Paquette and looking for RJC to interview her and her catchphrase and throwing the shoe is funny, and that's going to get people to cheer her. And she's wrestling against someone who's not a sympathetic babyface because she's been heelish on her own. So it's basically setting up what we talked about before, where you're going to have an awkward crowd reaction because the crowd probably end up cheering her more than Sky Blue because she's entertaining, and Sky Blue has kind of been all over the place.
Yeah. All right, Azan, his fourth and final thing is, do you think the Kingdom will be appearing next week on Dynamite as the Masked Goons? Yeah, what'd you think of what we saw with Storm Taven and Bennett tonight, and just kind of the follow-up on what they did last Wednesday on Dynamite, and just how this whole Roderick Strong saying MJF is a devil and he's setting up Samoa Joe. Does this seem like a story where they know where they're going and they're just unveiling a little layer at a time? Do you ever get a sense they're making it up as they go along, or they're not clear on how to tell the story? And how did tonight help or hurt that?
Oh, they're definitely making up as they go along. I don't think they ever intended it to go on this way for this long. I know Adam Cole got injured that may have changed things. When Roderick Strong first started doing this, I thought it was hilarious. And part of it is based on the knowledge of I've watched Roderick Strong for many years, and he was not known as a wrestler with a great personality.
Mm-hmm.
But then he went to the point of, oh, this is interesting, too unique, to now it's getting annoying. He can't yell Adam, so he yells Samoa Joe instead. AEW has a tag team division that's not as strong on as it could be. And you have Matt Taven and Mike Bennett, who are former Ring of Honor, former Impact, former IWGP Tag Team Champions, kind of just not being used to their full potential in a spot that they could be used. Although they did win a match today, but it was just more comedy than anything else. I like the idea of Roderick Strong telling Samoa Joe that they're going to attack him because of his own history. But the whole thing is like, you're my best friend, and because Adam Cole's my best friend, and he likes you. It's just, it sounds like a conversation that my 5-year-old daughter would have about friends. And I don't know if that's necessarily what I want on our wrestling show. People arguing about who's friends, who's not friends.
Yes, I know. All right, very good. Thank you, Azan, for that email. Let's go. First of all, if you're joining us in progress here, we are live streaming after Collision, and the number, if you want to participate, is 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad. That's 347-215-8558, and then push 1 to flag yourself on the switchboard. You can also email us, WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. We found out, sort of unfortunately, that a lot of our at PW Torch emails were not forwarding to my Gmail account, which I just have open on my screen all the time. It's just a clean format, and so a lot of emails you guys have been sending were lost on our PW Torch server, not getting forwarded, and we kind of figured that out. So I've been mentioning this week on the shows that we're just going to default to Gmail because, frankly, it's just more reliable to get the emails that you send. So WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. I have to get in the habit of saying that. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com if you want to participate in the show and give feedback. You don't have to listen to the show live to participate. After Raw, while you're watching Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision, you can email us during the shows, and we will likely read your email on the air. All right, our caller here is Mike from Hershey. Mike, thanks for calling and pushing 1. What's on your mind about Collision tonight?
Yeah, well, actually, I was just checking. I was listening in because I wanted to find a – wait till I popped in, till I found something that I felt like I could talk about. Because when you guys started talking about the devil storyline, that's kind of what's keeping me going with AEW right now. And yeah. You know, just so that's what the point that was just made about how it was really the question that I was going to ask was. At this point, I feel like maybe they are just kind of making it up as they go. And, was there something that they were going to do? And is there going to be, is this reveal kind of delayed at this point until they figure it out, something that makes sense? Because at this point, I'm not even sure. I'm not sure what we're headed for. I know there's speculation out there as to, who's behind this mask. And that's what I keep trying to find out by tuning in every show that I can, and everything. I'm trying to keep up with everything AEW basically, except for Rampage. I'm just not really with any weight really on Rampage.
Well,
good.
Patrick Moynihan says at the bottom of all his Rampage reports, if it's a show worth watching or not. So you can even skip spoilers and just go to pwtorch.com, read our Rampage report. Patrick will say, this is an above-average show, this is a must-watch show, or this is a skippable show. So that's a good cue if you are limited in your hours, then you don't necessarily watch it live on Fridays. That's my cheap plug, but also it's a good format, because I know a lot of people are kind of iffy on whether they want that fifth hour of AEW.
Yeah, and it's something that's on my DVR, but there's a lot of stuff on my DVR, I guess. And I rarely get around to it, so that's kind of where I'm getting. I'm just being honest. I haven't watched Rampage for a long time. Even when I went to when I went to Collision, we didn't stick around for Rampage, but it was Ring of Honor after Collision that we didn't stick around for. So 2 points. I guess my biggest point was, I feel like they're really not an advance unless I'm missing something. I feel like I'm kind of being strung along here with the devil thing. I thought we would actually get I guess strike one was when there wasn't anything going on the pay-per-view. There wasn't any advancement of that story. I thought that would have been a good time to Full Gear, I guess, would have been the last pay-per-view. I thought there would have been something going on there, and now we're continuing to go down this road. And tonight, nothing really, I'm not really seeing any other seeds or clues that we're going to find out soon. So it's a little frustrating for that storyline angle. Yeah, feel the same way. We just don't really know where we're going with this thing.
I think Wardlow being in an outfit, and that was kind of a weird twist, and this, I think, sort of preposterous notion it's MJF, which doesn't really fit storylines. I don't know if they're trying to throw us off because, there was conversation initially, and I'm forgetting who originally brought it up. Was it Greg Kanner on the PW Torch Daily Cast saying that, I think it was him who said he thinks it's Britt Baker, which would make sense. And then independently of that, someone said, it sounded like a female voice last week. And I like that. I like the idea that storyline-wise that Britt Baker was upset with MJF and she's been kind of cryptic on Twitter. Rich Van and I talked about that on the VIP show, Everything with Rich and Wade, this earlier this week. She's been kind of on Twitter in a way where you've sort of interpreted as storyline gripes with AEW. But I could imagine her just wanting to get at MJF because MJF was trying to pull Adam Cole into having, a singles lifestyle, let's call it, on the road and at bars. And there's a backstory there if they wanted to use that as the impetus, but they could have their own version too. I don't know how Wardlow fits into that, but I don't know how they can deny that he wasn't the one who was involved last week. And then the question here is it could it be Taven and Bennett and Strong who are part of it? Some have speculated, maybe Kyle O'Reilly is involved in this, although I don't think he's a big enough name, even in AEW, for fans to think that's a nice payoff. So I don't know. I mean, to me, Britt Baker makes the most sense, but maybe it's a group of people also, and they form, yes, believe it or not, a faction in AEW of the devil and the devil, Britt Baker, and some people. And it could just be Adam Cole and Wardlow, and it doesn't even have to involve Taven, Bennett, and Strong. So anyway, Chris, I have things that I think will make sense or that I'm kind of hoping for, or leaning towards hoping happens, but I don't have a for sure clear idea of where it's going. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, I don't have a clear idea where it's going either. I feel like it could go in a lot of different directions, but the question I have in my mind is, what is their ultimate goal? Whoever it is has to explain why they didn't take out MJF in other opportunities. I mean, you guys remember the very first time that the devil, the masked man attacks when they attack Jay White, the first time he cut a promo on MJF, I think sometime in September or October. And initially there was speculation that people thought it would be members of the Bullet Club from Japan, and which was kind of crazy. But
yeah,
I think the problem is this has gone on so long that it could conceivably be four or five people, which is why whenever it's revealed, it has to be very clear, you know, why didn't they attack MJF against Jay White? If they don't do something against Samoa Joe, why not? Why don't they attack MJF on any show? You know, they have plenty of opportunity. It just has to be very clear. I was a bit concerned where they had the explanation for how they got into the arena on Dynamite. It gave me very much NWO vibes when they figured out how the NWO was able to get into the arena, and figured out that Eric Bischoff let them in, which made sense, but then obviously made Eric Bischoff part of the NWO. So I'm not saying that Tony Khan should be the devil. They're going to have to explain how they were able to get things that you would not assume they'd be able to get, or get into places that they should have been able to get into.
So if it's Britt Baker, and this would be very clever of Tony Schiavone to throw people off, is it Tony Schiavone who's giving access to Britt Baker because of their known friendship, their, you know, the dynamic they had in year one of AEW? And maybe she tricked Tony into getting access, or Tony was a co-conspirator. Not that I want Tony to turn heel, but if he was like this innocent victim of Britt, taking advantage of him being cordial and nice and trusting her and giving her access to something that he had access to, you could tell that story. But it was an interesting, and that's like sort of wild speculation, but it was interesting that they introduced that, which felt like, is it paying attention to detail, which is, we just want to explain and acknowledge it's kind of weird that the devil just is able to control the screen. So they're sort of going, oh, it must be an inside job, and it's not going to be a big plot point. It's more them just acknowledging, yeah, it's kind of weird. It looks like a big production, so we know someone internally is in on it. Or is that a huge plot point that will kind of be a key aspect of how this all falls into place? And I'm not sure between those two things. I do not want it to be Tony Khan. I don't want it to be Dixie Carter. I don't want it to be Eric Bischoff, although Bischoff would be interesting. I mean, maybe he'd be effective in that role. And where has Jim Ross been lately? So I don't know. No, let's keep it within the realm of not a promoter turning heel. I saw Tony Khan do his heel promos on Impact. It was fun in that context. But it's not just that Tony would be bad in the role, because I don't think he'd be very good, but maybe it'd work out. I mean, he was kind of fun in the Impact promos he cut. But I don't think Tony being a character on TV every week is good for a lot of reasons. One of which is the wrestlers will inevitably lose respect for him for being a mark, for being on camera. I mean, that just happens to promoters and bookers who put themselves on TV, fair or unfair. And I think it's usually fair. Wrestlers look down on them and go, ah, look at them. And then you sort of take on, I said what I need to say. So, Mike, anything you want to follow up on? Anything Chris and I said?
Well, I actually kind of love the idea of Tony Schiavone being the devil. I don't know why that it cracks me up. But I'm kind of on the same page as I thought. I mean, I guess I thought it was Britt. You know, I heard one. Somebody make a pretty good case that it was, that it was Britt Baker, and I thought, well, that would make sense. That would be someone I would want to see. I mean, I actually don't think she's been around. Since, I feel like every time I call, I bring this back to it. It hasn't been that long. When I went to see Collision Live in State College, Britt Baker was a big deal. She was like the main event. Yeah. So I don't think we've seen her since then. And
they haven't talked about her. Wrestling promoters don't like to draw attention to who's not on the show. They like to focus on who is, and I get that. But she's a big enough name. You would think someone would say, oh, she's injured or she's on hiatus. Just not bringing her up at all makes me a little more suspicious it's her.
Yeah, and I think she's someone I would want to see. Like, if they revealed it, it would be good. That would make a lot of sense that she was, mad at MJF or interfering with, her relationship. That's good. I guess what I'm looking at is I just feel like I'm kind of lost in the storyline at this point, and I don't really see a, you know, I don't really see an end. What I thought at first was that the people who were, you know, attacking, the reason why MJF is not being attacked is because it's more of a punishment for people who help MJF, you know, that's what I thought it was at first. So if you were aligning with MJF, then now you were being the target, but not MJF himself. So almost that, and that's why I don't think it is MJF. I think MJF is the, you know, I think he'll be the one who is, you know, who's shocked by whoever it is. So yeah, I'm waiting. I'm waiting for that. That's actually, it's crazy to say, but it's probably the reason why I bought the Full Gear pay-per-view is I thought that we would get somewhere down the line, and we got zero that night with that.
Yeah, we did. Chris, what are the pros and cons of it being MJF, both in terms of it making sense and in terms of just the bright side of me, just get MJF back into a heel role and just sort of shake him loose from what's been an unsteady babyface run. Again, some I think were choices MJF made that I think were not great choices in terms of some of his promo work and some of the character work, going back to, you know, the work shoot stuff and whatever that was last year. But also, he's just had, you know, injury, you know, Punk get fired and Adam Cole get injured. It's just been one obstacle after another for him to just be able to kind of smoothly get through things. But it would, on the bright side, even if it didn't make a lot of sense and isn't your first choice, I think it would get MJF off a track that seems to have damaged his character. And it's not like right now it's, you know, relatively small sample size, but it seems like we're hearing the crowd pops for him are quite a bit down from their peak. So, Chris, pros and cons of MJF as a double.
Well, as I said, the very first people they attacked or who was attacked by the devil was Jay White. So a lot of people assumed it was him.
Yeah.
And they kind of moved away from that to people who are affiliated with MJF. I think with him, even though I don't think it would be great for it to be him, I think it would help his character have a reset. He's not a babyface. Not yet.
Yeah.
And he's kind of gone too far away from what he was that was making him successful. And he's someone who I could have seen be a babyface down the line after a couple of years, maybe, you know, losing the title, having another couple feuds, but it happened too quickly. So I think the pro would be he could maybe reset his character back to being a straight heel and would have a bit more direction. The con would be it would be kind of meandering because I'm trying to remember now. I believe he was attacked by the...
Yeah.
So why would they attack him if he was one of them? That would be a logic gap they'd have to sew up.
Yeah. I hope this all makes sense when there's a payoff and someone can put a YouTube video together of just showing the sequence and all the, you know, all the clues, but also as Tony Khan said on the media call a couple of weeks ago, there's red herrings out there, but you don't want the red herrings to be so egregious that it's like, well, you're just making it up as you went along and now you're calling it a red herring. You know, so, but these are the types of things, like the big mystery that Eric Bischoff pushed in WCW. And it's just like, if you've got to deliver on this. And Mike, I think a lot of people are in the position you're in. They're invested in it, but there's sort of a, this better make sense and the payoff better be good. And that's where I think Britt Baker, to me, seems like the best option. And then other things would have to also fall into place in terms of who she's leading and where they go from there. But I think there's some bad choices out there that I'm a little concerned about.
Yeah, and has Wardlow been attacked yet by anybody? Has he been attacked by any of these guys?
No.
Okay,
I'm
so that's
pretty
that's,
sure not. Chris, jump in if you remember that. Yeah,
I don't think he has.
He's just been winning squashes.
Yeah,
and he destroyed MJF, you know, but didn't get his title shot because MJF disappeared after that. So way back. Yeah.
Well, there was a couple of weeks ago too. There was a segment where MJF was walking down the hallway, and I think he was goofing on Darby Allin's locker room or something, and you know he wrote something on his, and then Wardlow came around the corner and basically started like, you know, pushing him up against the wall, caught him off guard, and he looked. It was one of the worst MJF segments of all time because he didn't fight back. He looked like he was completely in fear for his life, and he was getting. You remember that? And so So I'm thinking, if MJF's the devil, why wouldn't he just sick his boys on Wardlow? So I feel like there's got to be some reason. Either Wardlow is, I think Wardlow's part of this. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I think they're throwing it. It's just my feeling is that in the reveal of this, if it's good, and I hope it's good, that it's going to be a realignment possibly of MJF and Wardlow. I don't know. So maybe there's something in there, because I can't understand why that seems to me to be a little bit of a lack. You know, if MJF's the devil, the guy who beat him up in the hallway, basically, or, you know, made a fool of him, should probably be, getting the boots, I would think, from his thugs. So anyway, that's just a final thought. Yeah. Made me thought about it. The other thing, I don't know if you find this interesting, but as someone who is not a fan whatsoever of Ring of Honor, you know, the way that they don't respect Ring of Honor, but the way that it's affiliated, the way that they, you know, there was an era there for a while where, you know, the Ring of Honor championship would be defended in the, you know, the main event of AEW Dynamite. Now, and it'd be like, what am I watching? Tonight, Ethan Page, he made a comment where he had a promo about how he's calling out Kenny Omega. I think last time he had a match in Canada, you know, they brought Ethan Page out to headline that show. Looks like he's calling out Kenny Omega in Canada again. And he kind of mentioned, he said, you know, you don't really hear much from Ethan Page. And in his, in his promo, he said, you know, I'm kind of on a roll. He's like, I'm winning matches in Ring of Honor. And now it's time for me to come. I just thought the way that the phrasing was kind of like, hey, I'm winning some matches in the minor league, and I'm ready to come up to the major league and challenge a competitor. And you know what actually struck me was that would be a great way to use Ring of Honor. If you rack up some wins in Ring of Honor and it's the, I don't want to call it developmental, but it's the step down. It's AAA, and you're ready to come up to the majors to face somebody. I think that was cool. So if that was intentional, good job. If not, it just means that they're putting too much weight on Ring of Honor for AEW fans. Cause I don't care, you know, one bit about that. So anyway.
Yeah. My vote is still shut it down. And I don't say that with glee or joy. I just think Tony Khan doesn't need to be spread thin, and people who invest in Dynamite deserve to have the best 2-hour show they can have with the best talent and all the attention of the booker, making it the best show possible. And if they're going to do Collision, then it's even more important to not be watered down. And I just think it's bad for attendance. I just don't think going to a live event and having it peter out with essentially a minor league group of wrestlers who the majority of the fans attending aren't excited to stick around late at night to watch wrestle squash matches. I just don't think it's a good live experience, and such an important part of AEW growing. And the next email we'll get to gets into this, is having really big enthusiastic crowds. And at least they're not burning out the crowds with Ring of Honor beforehand. But when Dynamite or Collision go off the air, if there's ROH tapings, you're the fans are sort of trying to decide, well, when do we leave? And it's in the middle of the show. And I don't know. It just seems like it's not good for return visits. I know Tony thinks, hey, it's bonus wrestling, more the merrier, but people have things to do, and you want your shows to hit a crescendo and end on a high note, and that's just not a good way to do it. So I think there's a lot of negatives, but overtly treating it as, you know, framing its purpose would be helpful, and I just don't think Tony wants to commit to that. I don't think he wants to say it's a minor league. I don't think he wants wrestlers there to think if they're working Ring of Honor shows that they're minor league, that he wants them working for this legacy brand alternative, but it doesn't have its own identity. It doesn't have a reason for existing that AEW's ever explained, other than he bought a company and there's an overlap in talent and they run pay-per-views and you can subscribe to watch their shows, which a handful of people do. I just don't think it's worth the effort. I think it's taking away from making the core AEW product better. And, you know, Tony might think I can handle it all, but man, there's things I watch on the TV shows, booking wise and presentation wise, where I'm like, this show could have used more attention from somebody, and Tony Khan, you know, would be the person to do it. And yet, you know, there's Ring of Honor taking some of his attention away from it. Chris, what do you think about the state of ROH?
Well, as many of you, or some of you know, or I said to Wade the first time, I'm a longtime VIP subscriber. Lapsed for a while when I wasn't watching wrestling, but
we don't need to talk about that. No, go ahead. I'm
never.
I'm joking.
The
ancient history.
The Sinclair, you know, and as some of you know, a rich fan of everything with Rich and Wade is one of my best friends from college for a long time. And nothing got me into, you know, how I got into the torch. I started writing reports for Ring of Honor, the wrestling show in 2021, because I enjoyed the show that much. And I even went to, Justin and I went to Final Battle. For me, I went there, you know, in a pandemic with my wife 7 months pregnant, because I really wanted to be for that show, Final Battle 2021. So the last few years of Sinclair era of Ring of Honor was really important to me. It kind of got me into the space and happy to be here. And as soon as Tony Khan bought the show, bought Ring of Honor, I think Justin and I decided, at least maybe I was very adamant that I didn't want to do a Ring of Honor show anymore because I didn't think it would be what it was. And I remember CM Punk said he was happy. This guy, he was with AEW. He was happy that Tony Khan bought Ring of Honor because he would treat it right. And I actually I would have preferred if WWE had bought Ring of Honor and they just had video compilations and maybe interviews with their talent, because I think what he's doing is misusing Ring of Honor. I'd hoped that they would maybe have it be a shadow brand, maybe it be booked separately, but he's used Ring of Honor as a crutch. You know, obviously we had, you know, Ring of Honor Final Battle matches are promoted on the show, like Shane Taylor and Keith Lee, which is a big match for me. Shane Taylor's one of my favorite wrestlers, but it doesn't really fit in the AEW Collision context.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he is struggling enough to book AEW that he doesn't need to also book Ring of Honor. But Ring of Honor is not special like it was for the 20 years of this, well, the Sinclair era and before. You know, Ethan Page is someone who I used to watch in Evolve many years ago. I was a big fan of his. He's gotten such tremendous shape. He's a really good promo. But it doesn't make sense for him. Also, to be fair, he actually lost a couple of matches in Ring of Honor to Tony Nese. So it's not even accurate that he's won all these matches in Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
And he's like, Ring of Honor is not treated as important, and you're going to wrestle Kenny Omega, who's one of AEW's biggest stars. And everyone goes, yeah, okay. It's just a match thrown together for a match. It would have made much better sense if Ethan Page appeared on the show a couple times, you know, three times, won a couple matches and said, you know, I feel confident. I've won on Ring of Honor. I've beaten three people here on Collision or Rampage or whatever. I want to challenge Kenny Omega to come back to Canada. But instead, they use this crutch of Ring of Honor not properly. And it pains me to say this. I love Ring of Honor. I watched it, you know, went to shows in New York when I couldn't watch the television, and covered it here for the Torch and did the podcast Honor Speak with Justin. But I wish it would go away, only because it's not going to be treated right in the current wrestling context.
All right, Mike, back to you.
Well, that's pretty much it, guys. I mean, I think what you just said makes me feel a little bit better, like I'm not a total jerk, because
no.
I don't like, you know, Ring of Honor is just not, you know, just doesn't do it for me. Like you said, I used to catch it from, you know, here and there, you know, late night, wherever it would show up. I think it was on, like, our local CBS, and, like, I think that's a Sinclair. And, you know, it was cool. There was, you know, it was wrestling. It was more wrestling. And that was pretty neat. But I was definitely never a super fan. And when they bring it into the AEW, you know, this is just the amount of, especially with the Chris Jericho thing. I know that you had speculated that maybe there was a, you know, a means to an end, trying to get a TV deal or something, and trying to have someone with a name representing the company at that point made a lot of sense. But man, it was frustrating as a viewer of AEW to try to keep up. The only other thing, guys, before I leave is this: I would just say, you know, the Continental Classic, it's just not for me. You know, it doesn't mean that it's not great. I saw, you know, some of the matches have been awesome, but it's just the format for me is just not what I'm looking for. Sounds funny, but I'm more interested in what, you know, I mentioned the Devil storyline. I think it's a continuation, obviously, of the MJF, you know, Adam Cole storyline, which was, you know, kept me interested in the product for a while. There's some small stuff going on right now, like, you know, with CJ Perry and Miro, that's get a little tidbit of that. That kind of stuff, I think, is what keeps me going. And the Continental Classic, it fills the time, and the matches are cool. But in the end, I'm not really sure, it's just not the format for me. So I know there's a lot of other people out there like that. That's about all I have to say, guys, and appreciate the time once again. Have a great time. Have a good rest of the weekend.
Great. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, Chris, what do you think about the percentage of fans that AEW is chasing or trying to retain who feel like Mike does? Because that's the conundrum for Tony Khan and the conundrum about this sports-like approach. But Tony showed, I think, or revealed, if we interpreted what he said correctly, when he goes, hey, we're going to put these good matches on, but put your money where your mouth is and tune in hardcore fans who want to see good wrestling. And it sort of revealed that he doesn't think that's enough. And he's been talked into doing this other stuff, some of which works, some of which doesn't. A lot is up to personal taste. When I say works, it works for a lot of fans. And some of it doesn't seem to work for a lot of fans. Other stuff like Tony Storm gets a lot of praise. But it feels like a company that is flailing about trying to figure out what's going to latch on and help them grow. So how do you feel about the Continental Classic in that regard? Is it being done well enough that it's not any worse for fans like Mike who want storyline, as long as we had, like we had tonight, storyline weaved into the show with the Devil and with CJ and Miro and other, forwarding of even the Ethan Page promo, and Sky Blue and Tony Storm. There was enough other stuff going on that even if the tournament's not for you, the matches are good enough, it's not a turnoff. Or do you think, no, this actually is potentially negative, or is this what AEW needs to lean in more on and commit to it to bring some of the fans back who have grown disgruntled with all the silly stuff that a lot of people call sports entertainment-y stuff, even though technically sports entertainment is just a euphemism for pro wrestling and the term's being used in a weird way. But anyway, Chris, that's a sidebar issue. What do you think?
Yes, I always tell people sports are supposed to be entertaining. unless you're watching Iowa football, that might be a different category. But other than them, sports are entertaining, especially when your favorite team wins.
And when sometimes you'd see they go, well, we got good pro wrestling, but we also need the entertainment in between. And whenever I hear that, it's such a tell that the person saying it actually thinks pro wrestling is getting in the way of being entertaining the viewers. And that's sort of this necessary evil. And it's such a tell, because if you don't believe wrestling's entertaining, you shouldn't be in the pro wrestling business. Go work for, a variety show or whatever, but stay away from pro wrestling. I mean, you have to think of everything as a means to lead to the pro wrestling matches being the peak form of entertainment within a pro wrestling show. So this thing about, we got to have a mix of wrestling and entertainment is a terrible way to phrase things. Anyway, go ahead.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah,
I think the issue with the Continental Classic is, one, it can't be like the Japanese tournaments, because when the Japanese tournaments take place, there is nothing else going on. For example, right now in New Japan, they're doing their Real World Tag League, which is a tag team tournament. They're not having tag team tournament matches and also adding, Sonata's not defending the IWGP title or Okada having a big singles match. They're kind of standalone. And because the Continental Classic isn't standalone, because they're going to have these other angles, it really can't be really as perceived as great as perhaps it could be. And I also don't think American wrestling fans are into that type of tournament. I think they like it for a title, maybe on a certain circumstances, if the title is vacant for whatever reason. But the thing I do like about it is it's giving, for the most part, at least today on Collision, it is giving storyline reasons for matches. Too much of AEW has focused on, we'll just have matches and people will like them and they'll be good and we'll get star ratings and whatever. But that doesn't get most wrestling fans in. AEW is a preaching to the choir wrestling promotion, and they need to try to grow the choir, and they need to develop stars, and they need to do that in a way that, medium, slow, small, medium, and large stars. But I think they need to just have a wrestling show that makes sense. I think in the conversation we had about the Devil, we've gone through all these permutations because it's been all over the place. And I think that they just need to be more focused in their presentation. Now, for example, you mentioned El Hijo del Vikingo. He won today in the match with Kip Sabian, all right match. Did they mention anything about him again? No. If someone watched that match and thought, oh, I like him, he's a really impressive wrestler, I'd love to watch him again, when are they watching him again? You can't rely on them to watch AEW for the next month and a half and hope he shows up.
Yeah, there's so much of that. Yeah,
they need to actually promote people and say, oh, wow, or maybe, you know, have him, see he's going to wrestle next week on Collision, or he's going to wrestle in 2 weeks or something. They need to actually promote people and not just promote it on the fact that you love AEW and you will watch everything every week just because it's AEW and you have nothing else to do.
And that's part of why I think just whether Tony wants to pay people to be off television or lay them off is up to him ultimately who he wants to pay. But having as many wrestlers on the roster and having them sort of just come and go, you know, indiscriminately. There's some who you see a lot of, but then there's stretches of time where, you know, Nyla Rose is not on AEW TV and you don't know why if you're just watching Dynamite and Collision. I just grabbed a random name of something. Either Abaddon has been gone for a long time from AEW's main TV shows. And then she shows up again. And I mean, it's fine if that happens from time to time, as long as once they appear on TV, that means we're committed to pushing them and they're going to be part of something that counts for the next few months. And if you want to rotate people in and out that way, that's fine. But having people just sort of show up and disappear, show up and disappear, show up and disappear, it jerks fans around and they become hesitant to invest. And it's sometimes it's top names, but a lot of times it's more the mid-carders. And then, you know, sometimes they're in Ring of Honor or they were on AW Dark or they're sort of almost only on Rampage or they're out with an injury. We just, you know, the average viewer doesn't know. And just getting that focus on, you know, 16 male wrestlers and 10 female wrestlers and just featuring them consistently. And sort of like you have a limited number of people who can be on the bench in the NBA or on the bench in an NHL game or on the sidelines in an NFL game. Pick your team and make changes on the fringe, but really decide who your starters are and go with them. So when people tune in, they know what they're tuning in for. And same thing with buying tickets. You just don't know who you're going to get when you buy a ticket to Dynamite or Collision. I mean, you think about the big names who were not on Collision in front of that audience in Erie, Pennsylvania tonight. You know, John Moxley had a pre-taped interview, but he wasn't there. Kenny Omega was talked about. He wasn't there. The Young Bucks are gone, and they're not talking about it on TV. Major, major characters. And they're just going to ignore that they're not there. On and on. You know, Hangman Page is gone more than he's there. So, yeah, there's just so many instances of that. And you know, if you want, you can sell tickets based on the brand if you give a good wrestling product, but there's a whole other group of people who are not caring as much about the brand as when they buy a ticket, they want to know who's going to be on the show so they can go see their favorites. And with AEW, it's you know, maybe not even 50-50 that you're going to see most of your favorite stars when you go to a live event. So that's why just picking that core group and focusing on them and having your starters who are there all the time is good. I get, you know, contractually and travel-wise, they're not going to have everybody on Dynamite and Collision all the time, which then is advocates for sort of a formal brand split. But so that at least people would know who the top stars are on Wednesdays versus Saturdays. But Tony doesn't want to do that. So there's all these things he doesn't want to do that leads him, sort of like with Ring of Honor, to not doing anything to define things at all. And they have some negative side effects. Speaking of which, let's go to an email here from Riven, I believe. He says, here she says, I love Collision tonight. It feels like the Continental Classic is reestablishing AEW's identity in real time. That means great wrestlers having great matches. Promo-based stories are great too and totally necessary, but over the years I've come to realize that what I love more is the in-ring action. So this is a good counter to Mike from PA who called us up and more in line with what Eric Kroll says when he's joining me as co-host and others. I felt let down by AEW at various times over the past year or two as they've leaned more heavily into sports entertainment. There's that phrase. But the C2 has been reigniting the genuine passion I had for this promotion when I started watching it. It's been reported that part of the reason QT Marshall left was because of the shift towards a more New Japan style, and that news honestly made me giddy. And this tournament feels like it's delivering on that mission statement. For now, I'm not going to think about what happens afterwards. Instead, I'm just going to revel a bit in some excellent physical contest between exciting pro wrestlers. My question, can this approach grow AEW's brand, or is it limiting? And if it's limiting, is that necessarily a bad thing if the millions of fans worldwide are dialed into the product that AEW is delivering? Have a good night, guys. So, I mean, we've covered some of this, but it's a good, you know, example. Those fans are out there, and the question is, can you the old, can you cut the baby in half? You know, is AEW's best chance to grow super serving an audience with a clear identity, or having a something for everyone approach, which was always TNA's argument? Oh, tune into TNA pay-per-view. You get a hardcore match. You get a classic old school tag match. You get an X Division all action match. We're going to give you some sort of gimmick match, a bull rope or cage or something like that. And then the main event world title match. And so something for everybody, some blood, some wrestling, some old school tag. But what happened is, yes, there's some fans who like a little bit of everything, but there's a lot of fans who just want a lot of something. You know, McDonald's tried to serve pizza for a while. They had salads for a while, and then they dropped them, because when people go to McDonald's, they know what they want. And if they want something else, they're going to go across the street to a different place. So his question is, can this approach grow AEW's brand, or is it limiting? And if it is limiting, is that necessarily a bad thing? And I don't have, you know, a for sure answer. I mean, it's just, and I don't think Tony Khan does either. It's pretty clear. He's, you know, I use the word flailing, but, and it has a negative connotation to it, but I do think he's just, you know, trying a lot of stuff, and the approach is deliberately trying to be a little bit for everybody. And I think that came through with his comment about put your money where your mouth is. If you want to see good matches, because I'm going to give it to you, you better tune in. So, Chris, I don't have the answer, but I think the key is doing whatever you do well, first and foremost. So whatever you choose to do, you should have the roster and the booking mind and the confidence that you're going to do what you choose to do really well. So if you're an all things to all people, be sure you're doing everything well. Don't do crap versions of the quote and sports entertainment-y stuff. If you're going to do wrestling, really be committed to it. Have cleaner finishes and have fewer titles and have people who get title shots qualify in a way that doesn't seem arbitrary or unfair. I just don't think AEW is excellent at much of anything other than having a roster that can have really good matches like we saw tonight and certainly we see on pay-per-views. Chris, your thoughts?
I once called, I think I did this on Frank Pagliani's Then and Now when I was on the show a few months ago. I called AEW the biggest independent wrestling promotion of all time. And as someone who covers independent wrestling every week, I see a lot of it is, it has very similarities to independent wrestling. And I say that as someone who loves independent wrestling, who's gone to shows with 100 people and had a great time. However, when you have 5 hours of cable television, it's not as simple as, you know, they used to say, you know, certain teams don't have to practice in basketball, just roll out the balls. In AEW, it's like, well, just roll out the mat. We'll have this great show. It'll go on for 4.5 hours. We'll have a great time. It doesn't work for everybody. You need to build stars. If I say small, medium, and large, obviously main event stars help. You have people in the mid-card who could potentially be main eventers as well. But that involves focus. That involves, you know, having people grow. You know, just using the example of Ethan Page, for example, you know, he cut a great promo. And again, I only know this because I'm a fan of his and I follow him on Twitter. He had that match with MJF that he lost in his hometown of Hamilton, and he cut a great promo about going home and how he's going to change his ways. You know, obviously he was with the Hardys and doing some heel stuff, and it would have been a great promo to air on Dynamite 2 weeks before he came out today, because people would have seen him in that light. They would have maybe brought up the fact that he'd won a Ring of Honor if you were going to really set up and promote him against Kenny Omega. I don't expect him to beat Kenny Omega. It's just a match for a match. But you could have promoted him to his heights and then had the match. Instead, the mentality of AEW is just that it'll be a good match, you'll like it, and that's limiting because in wrestling, you've always wanted to watch stars. However, they got there, however they are, and they need to find ways to produce, have people like. I think one of their biggest, you know, people argue the extent of the star that he is, but I think one of the biggest AEW success stories is Orange Cassidy, only because he is someone who's toiled in the indies for many, many years and has been a credible star. You know, I wouldn't say he's a main event star, but he's a decent level star. But he's also someone who had matches in the first segment over and over again that were the highest rated. He was on a winning streak where he beat, you know, 17 or 18 different opponents. So it wasn't just random. They put the time in on him to help grow his stardom, And I think they need to pick, you know, four or five people and really do that, as opposed to just you win this week and I win next week, and then we're gone until February. And then I was a heel last week and I'm a face this week. You know, they have to have continuity. They have to have clear booking, and that's really where they lack. That's really where they struggle.
Yeah, let's go to another email here. This is from Jason in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Wayne and Chris, I hope you're both doing well. Overall, a very good show tonight with good matches, but a couple gripes. Let me preface this by saying I'm a day one AEW fan, and overall really do enjoy the content most weeks. The pay-per-views always deliver. Gripe one, the logic gaps in this company are getting incredibly difficult to overlook. Why wouldn't Eddie have exploited Danielson's eye injury more or at all? Then he manages to get beat. We just had a one-legged man who isn't selling shit beat Jay White in the Full Gear main event, and now a Cyclops just beat Eddie. What gives? So we'll comment on that first and get to his second gripe. I was thinking about that. I would have liked that to have been addressed. Again, it sort of gets to, is Ring of Honor minor league promotion or not? We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to define it. And I don't think they want to draw attention to Danielson's eye injury, but that's like not all I could think about, but I was thinking about it a lot watching the match. It's like it's slipping out of place. Is this going to be dangerous for Danielson if a move goes wrong? Is he truly cleared, or is this just, you know, and this is prevent, you know, kind of a extra layer of preventing a re-injury, or is this like he shouldn't even be in the ring and they're pushing it? And you can't help but have that thought, but then you have the sort of storyline thought, why is Eddie Kingston not just pounding away at his eye socket? Well, Eddie's a good guy. Well, I would have liked to have had Eddie say, I want to beat Danielson without going after his eye, but now you're saying maybe Danielson has a weakness that where he shouldn't even be medically cleared. So it was a bit of a conundrum, but it did distract from the story of the match. Chris, how do you think they handled it, and would you have done it differently?
I think there was one glaring moment where, you know, they're having this match where they're trying to have a Japanese-style match with strikes and slaps. And there was one point where Kingston had mounted Danielson and the eye patch went out of place for the 85th time. And yep. Kingston just stopped until he adjusted it. And it took me out of the match because I'm like, you're supposed to have this hard-hitting match. This guy comes in, you know, with one eye. He has the eye patch removed. You know, again, it, you know, I don't want to say if it was a real fight, stuff like that, because that's, you know, whatever. But why wouldn't you hit him there? It's a glaring thing, and you know, he stopped and has him readjust. The referee checks on him, and it really takes away from that, you know, realism, as well as, you know, Eddie Kingston. Now I do point out continuity. Eddie Kingston quit AEW, I think, in March. I don't know how he got back on AEW. Anyway,
that's right, yeah.
Which is, you know, again, part of the continuity. He was the strong and the New Japan strong and Ring of Honor champions who gave up those belts willingly, which again does not happen in the G1. They don't give up their belts willingly to be in this tournament, and he's lost two of his matches, the first two matches. So I don't know what that says about those championships, but I think, you know, I think Danielson wrestling in the eye patch just took a lot out of it for me, because if you're going to have the kind of match that they had, they weren't having a catch wrestling, I want to roll you up, you roll me up match. They were having strikes and kicks, and you hit me as hard as you can, and I'll hit you as hard as I can. And so why wouldn't you go for that when you had the opportunity?
Yep. All right. Then his second gripe is the devil storyline. Does this company have nobody who took a creative writing class at any point? Where are the beats to this story? Not that I'm not interested in who will end up being the devil, but damn, tell a story. Not a hard concept. Further things week to week, have other people talk about it, etc. Nah, we'll just book another parade of matches. Thanks for the hard work, Jason in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So, yeah, I mean, that gets to the, you know, the rhythm, the beat of things. When is there any sense of when the payoff comes? And, you know, obviously this would just be a better storyline if AEW only had Dynamite or Rampage was defined completely differently. Where people just would understand, okay, storylines don't happen there. It's just, you know, matches and promos, which is kind of what it is. Or if there's a split roster where the devil storyline wasn't even part of Collision, but I think they sort of feel a responsibility to include some development storyline development on both shows, but then you have to do more recaps, which Tony doesn't like to do. So then you're then the conundrum of things happen on a show a lot of people didn't watch, but we don't want to lose viewers by doing recaps. And then the announcers have to do heavy lifting, and there's so many mixed signals. And I don't, you know, if the payoff is Britt Baker, the payoff will be a nice, whoa, I didn't see that coming for a lot of people. But people who have paid close attention will feel like, oh, that makes sense, but it wasn't really a candidate all along. And so in some ways it takes some of the fun out of the process because they don't want to go too far down the road of making you think it's someone else, because when it's not them, it'll feel contrived if they go too far down that road. So now you're in this sort of hazy holding pattern of giving sort of half clues to stretch it out until you want to pay it off. But you don't want to really give a strong clue, so everything has to be a red herring, and red herrings in this context are kind of weak, and I think it leaves people just, you know, intrigued but nervous about when is this going to pay off and is it worth me investing my speculation in it, when they're not really leading us towards two or three top candidates, other than I think that, you know, what I think is a largely preposterous notion that it's MJF himself. But I fear it could be. I don't put double-digit percentage on it. And I think the end result, you know, could be okay in terms of defining him again. But from a story standpoint, it feels like that would be a deflating revelation. And also, I just don't think they'd be saying it from the beginning. It might be MJF if that really was going to be him. So I just don't think it is for a variety of reasons. Chris, anything more on that?
Yeah, I just think, you know, whoever they end up picking or whoever ends up being the devil, there's going to be a part of the storyline where that person doesn't make sense as the devil. And so it's going to be very important that they explain it, how that person was, you know, that one instance that people are going to say, well, in this area that couldn't happen. It's very important that they explain who this is. They've spent so much time with it. This is the type of storyline that can run people off because they've been invested in it. And if it doesn't have a good payoff, they'll get upset. So they have to make sure they're very good on picking the right person and explaining it.
Yes, they do. All right. I'll throw to you. Any gripes that we haven't covered yet, Chris, that you want to talk about?
I guess the only thing for me, I guess we talked about this a little bit, but they had a Mercedes Martinez Willow vignette. Yep. For a match that was not announced.
Right.
And the last time that Justin and I did a Collision Post show about a month ago, and they did the same thing with Shane Taylor and Keith Lee. And for me, you know, I like Shane Taylor and Keith Lee, but why have a vignette on a show about two people wrestling and not saying it's going to be next week? Because I thought – I had to watch – I actually went back on the internet to watch that to think, did I miss them? did they announce that for this week? Did they announce that for today? And I think AEW has to – if you're going to sell a match, sell a time frame or wait until you have a time frame and then sell it. I assume that's going to be on Final Battle on the 15th. But,
right.
Again, you're taking – AEW time to sell Ring of Honor pay-per-view.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I want to run down just a few things on the show. First of all, just your thoughts on the Claudio Brody King match. You're talking about match quality. What do you think of the 13 minutes that they put in, and what is this tournament doing for Brody King at this point?
I thought it was a really good opener. I mean, Brody King is someone who has not got a lot of singles opportunities in AEW as part of the House of Black, but he was pretty heavily pushed in Ring of Honor, so he had a lot of single opportunities there. And I think he's doing very well with this. I think he's someone who, so far how the tournament has happened, he needs to have a storyline out of it because he's already proven that he's beaten Eddie Kingston, who's a double champion, as well as Claudio, who's the former Ring of Honor champion. Maybe he's setting up to – well, I guess no. I was going to say he's going to wrestle the Ring of Honor champion, but I guess that doesn't exist anymore because
right.
He's beaten the last two. But I think he's someone who's shown his skills as a singles competitor, and so he needs to be someone that they need to focus on a little bit more than they have when the tournament's over.
How far can Brody King go as a singles?
I think he can go pretty far. I felt that, you know, just because he's, you know, and maybe it's just mentally when you're in a stable, it's like the guy that's the leader or the you think he's going to be the main single star. But Brody King can do a lot of impressive moves, especially for a man of his size. He's been good in tag teams. He wrestled with PCO. But I think there's a lot that he can do as a singles competitor, especially because AEW doesn't have a lot of singles competitors that are not just look like him, but are his size. And it would kind of give a different dimension to their singles division. So I think he could go far given the opportunity.
Then the next tournament match was Andrade and Daniel Garcia. What do you think of the story they're telling with Garcia? And we'll start with that, and then also we'll talk about the CJ Miro segment, because Andrade was sort of a third person in that conversation.
Yeah, with Garcia and then the commentary from Matt Menard, I believe. You know, Danny Garcia is in a position in this group, where he's not going to get a lot of points. He's probably going to finish last, which is fine if there's a storyline out of it. And for him, it's more, it's not really the match itself. It's what the match will lead to, which we really can't see until the tournament is over. You know, good win for Andrade. You know, I said we just saw him this week on Wrestling Coast to Coast have a phenomenal match with Speedball Mike Bailey. The Miro CJ thing to me is really weird. I watch them and think, shouldn't they just be going to a marriage counselor? Like, why are they doing this on national television?
Yes.
I mean, there are places to go if you need help. But I don't know if it's going to lead to Miro. I mean, it could be a storyline where maybe Miro interfered in his match, maybe costing Andrade, like he was going to win the tournament. But they already said he's not going to attack him. So I just, it almost seems like a non sequitur to the whole show. It's like Miro doesn't wrestle. He just stays in the back to make sure CJ Perry doesn't talk to anyone.
I know it does. It's so frustrating. So many lost years of what could be Miro really contributing to this product. And whether it's just because he doesn't want to do jobs and Tony doesn't have leverage or want to stand up to him or what, it's a shame. It is because, man, I mean, he's been spinning his wheels for so long and just creating this little island storyline for Miro and CJ to have that Andrade's part of, I don't think is making up for what should be a better chapter in Miro's career at this point. I liked, by the way, Matt Menard on commentary. I'm not quite sure why he's a heel for discouraging Danny Garcia from doing the dance, the hip gyration swivel thing. I think that's hopefully something they're telling a story that he's going to leave behind. But I assume Matt Menard's supposed to be the heel by discouraging it. But to me, that makes him the babyface. It seems like he has Danny's best interest in mind.
Yeah, the dance is one of those things, again, in AEW. It happened once. It was kind of funny, and they've done it to death. And, you know, someone that's seen Danny Garcia on the Independence, he's a serious wrestler, or was portrayed as a serious wrestler, and the dance does not help that portrayal.
No. What do you think of John Moxley's stairwell promo? I was a little, like, concerned watching it. Talking about how he doesn't feel he's getting tingly fingers, and he listed body parts that are hurt, and he said he doesn't feel like his head is screwed on straight, and doctors are prescribing him all kinds of meds, and he's pissed off and depressed, and his body's failing him this last year, so the only thing he can do is wrestle out of it, which, you know, sort of sounds like the one thing he shouldn't be doing is wrestling out of it, given his style, if that's all what's bothering him. But he said this is what AEW is built on, and he wants to show everybody what AEW can be. I'm the ace of the world, and I mean, anytime Moxley's cutting a promo on your TV show, it's likely helping your TV show, and he's a key person in the tournament. It sort of felt like, let's check in on John Moxley, even though he's on the other show's tournament block. What do you think, Chris?
First of all, I thought it was good that AEW aired some of their social media promos on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Especially ones that related to the tournament, so that was good. Yeah, Moxley, he just sounds like someone who's going through a crisis, going through a difficult time. Though I will say, we joke about AEW matches throwing matches, and we usually record on Wednesday, Wrestling Coast to Coast, but I am very much looking forward to the Roosh-John Moxley match,
mm-hmm.
probably for perverse reasons. But they both wrestle a style that could be very interesting. But he sounds like someone who should be contemplating or might be contemplating retirement, which I don't know if that's necessarily what you want him portraying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's open. It sounded legit rather than storyline, because I'm not sure what the storyline purpose would be. Just kind of speaking from the heart. And, you know, I think people are going to, it wasn't a heel promo, you know, I mean, and there's, you know, it seems like they want Blackpool Combat Club to be kind of tweeners leaning on heels based on some of their actions. But yeah, it was compelling, but yeah, you kind of worry. It's like, should we be cheering him doing what he's doing if that's what's happening to him as a result? It makes you feel perhaps a little guilty encouraging such, you know, the type of matches that he's been having.
Yeah, and that's, you know, in a way I joke about it, but like him wrestling Rush, who wrestled a very physical style, mm-hmm. is not going to lead to a sort of sympathetic view of him because he might be receiving some punishment.
But maybe there's some storyline in mind, and this is kind of part of that, so we'll see. Chris, anything else you want to bring up from tonight's show before we sign off?
No, I think we covered everything else.
Yeah, cool. Feel good about it. Thank you, Chris. Pleasure talking AW with you again.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You bet. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Subscribe, search Wade Keller, search PW Torch, and we'll talk to you Monday night after Raw.